Good evening. As Christian said earlier, for those of you who don't know me, my name is Jared. I work with high school ministry here at Outreach Red Bank, and every once in a while I get a chance to preach, so I'm excited to speak with all of you tonight. And I want to welcome you all again. It's good to see everyone here, and new people welcome, and people who've been here for a long time, it's good to see you guys back. Last week we began a new series leading up to Easter and to the resurrection, where we're going to look at who God is, and whether he is a living God. Matt spoke last week about seeing Jesus Christ as the God who feels, who reaches out and touches us. Christian, we read a psalm last week, and Christian prayed about this. We talked about a God who is living, as opposed to the other gods who don't see and don't have hands and are nothing but idols. So for the next few weeks, tonight and for the following weeks, we're going to be looking at what a living God is like. And we're going to be looking particularly at Jesus Christ as the living God. Tonight, we're going to look at the God who hears. We're going to look at a story about Christ and what he does, and show and look at Jesus Christ as the living God who hears us. Now, I want us to think about one question tonight. And this is important, and I want you to hear it, and it's what the whole focus of what I'm going to say afterwards is going to be connected to. It's a very, very simple, basic question that I've already touched upon a little bit. And that's something we all have to answer and look at. And I want this to grab your mind and stay with you for the rest of my talk, okay? The question is, do you believe that Jesus Christ is the living God who hears us? Do you believe that? How you answer that question will impact and will affect how you live your life. Now, there's a simple, easy Christian answer where you say, oh yeah, I'm a Christian, of course I believe that. We're supposed to believe that. That's what I believe. I want you to suspend that thought to just say, yes, I believe Jesus is living and I believe Jesus hears me. That's a simple answer we run to sometimes. I want you to be honest with yourself and look at your life and reflect and think about that question. Is Jesus Christ a God who hears me? Some of you might honestly look inside and say, yes, I absolutely believe that. That's how I live my life. I go to God with everything. If that's you, great. Some of you might be in a place where at times you've really believed that. You've really thought that Christ is this God who hears you and you go to him. But maybe things have happened in your life, or life's gotten difficult, or life's gotten hard, or at some point you've turned away from that God. You've turned away from Christ. And you aren't in a place where you think he actually hears you. For whatever reason, you might look at Christ and say, I know I'm supposed to believe this. But the truth of the matter is, if I was honest with myself, I don't really believe that he hears me. Some of you may not believe he's ever heard you at all. You might look at life and see how rough it is, and see difficulties, and see broken relationships, and see a broken, messed up world. And that might cause you to look and say, I can't believe in a living God. I don't believe this Christ that I hear about. I don't believe that this Jesus Christ that's being declared here as this resurrected Son of God, I don't believe that. I don't think he hears me. I want you to know that wherever you are tonight, whatever you believe about that tonight, I'm not going to be able to say anything that'll convince you or change your mind. I don't believe that I have the power to do that. What I want to show you is I want to look at a story tonight. Actually, I want to look at a few stories, but I'm going to zone in on one in particular. I want to tell you about a man who came to believe and came to see Jesus as the living God. I want to look at a man who wrestled with those same questions. A man who tried to follow God with his life, and when he came to see Christ, saw life differently. But a man who had the same questions we have. A man who would sit and think about life and probably begin to ask himself, is the God I serve a God who hears me? Now, that man is going to be a man named Peter. If you've read some parts of the Gospels, you know Peter is someone who ended up being one of Jesus' closest friends. And I want to look at this story tonight and everything I'm going to say through the eyes of Peter. So I'm going to take a few minutes and try to get you into his world. Does that make sense? All of us tonight are going to try to see the world through the eyes of Peter. So we're going to be looking through the eyes of a first century Galilean Jewish fisherman. That might be a stretch for most of us. Can we agree on that? But we're going to try it anyway, all right? So let me tell you a little bit about Peter. Peter was a fisherman, lived in Galilee, and he's Jewish. Now, here is his world. He is someone who's believed in a living God. As a good Jew, he knows this God of old, this Yahweh is what they called him, that he knows and believes is the God of the universe. That psalm that we read, Psalm 115, Peter would have said, that's my God. The gods around me, the gods I see, the Greek gods and the Roman gods, and in his world, people believed in all sorts of gods and lots of gods and different gods for different things. Peter would have looked at all of those and he would have thought, no, those things aren't real. Those things aren't alive. This would be a good Jewish response to those things. Peter would look at the Greek gods and the Roman gods. He'd say, this is what the gods of the other nations are like. This is what happens. People cut down a tree, right? They cut down a tree. They take part of the wood and they build a table. They take another part of the tree and they build a chair. And they take another part and they carve out an idol and they worship it. That's how Peter saw the other gods. He said, no. Those are idols. Those are nothing. The God I believe in is Yahweh, the God of Israel. He's the real living God. He's alive. He speaks to us. He hears us. Now, if you're Peter, you would have known an important story too. And I want to tell you that story. Peter believed in Yahweh. He believed in this God. He believed in a God who could hear him. And he knew his tradition. He knew his beliefs. He had the Old Testament, which we look at sometime. It's the Jewish Bible. And I'm going to turn there in just a moment. He would have said, here's how I can tell you God hears me. Let me tell you about who God is, what he's done for his people. And he would have known this story. This would have been one of the biggest stories in all of Israel. This would have been like our American Revolution, okay? If you know nothing about history, you still know some things about the American Revolution, right? Even if you're not a history buff, you know who George Washington is, right? Everyone know who George Washington is? Please nod. Thank you. Thomas Jefferson, taxation without representation, the Declaration of Independence, Constitution. There's a Mel Gibson movie, Patriot. You would have known some of that stuff, right? Even if you know nothing about history, you know about this story. Well, Peter knew Israel's story. And Israel's story had one awesome, incredible story about who God was. That if you'd asked Peter, and Peter said, I believe in a God who hears us, they would have said, okay, Peter, tell us about your God. This is the story he would have told them, okay? And I want you to open your Bibles if you have one with you. If you have one with you, it's going to be Exodus chapter 2. If you don't, it's page 44. In your Bibles. And we're going to be looking at verse 23 and following to the end of that chapter. Now, let me just tell you a little bit about Israel's history. At one time, Israel was a nation of slaves. They were slaves to the people of Egypt. If you remember grade school history, you've heard about pharaohs and pyramids and things like that in Egypt. At one point, Israel, Peter's people, were a nation enslaved by another nation of Egypt. And their life was difficult and their life was tough. And they'd heard that God, this Yahweh, this God that they knew and believed was the living God, they'd heard that he called them to be something else, but they were slaves. And I want to read these words. This is verse 23. After a long time, the king of Egypt died. The Israelites groaned under their slavery and cried out. Out of the slavery, their cry for help rose up to God. God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Those are some of the patriarchs of the Israelite family. God looked upon the Israelites and took notice of them. If you'd asked Peter, tell me about your living God, he would have told you this story. And he would have told you the rest of this story, too. He said, we were a people who were slaves, but our God heard our groans and our cries, and he delivered us. And this is the rest of that story. Israel breaks free from Egypt. God, right after this story, God starts doing really crazy, incredible things. God finds this guy Moses, and he sends Moses to Pharaoh, and he says, Moses, you're going to help lead my people out into a promised land. I've decided to do something good with you guys. I've heard your groans. I've heard your cries from slavery. And I'm going to take you away from Egypt and make you into a nation. And as the story goes, and if you've seen the Ten Commandments or that Charlton Heston movie, you can piece this together. There's plagues and plagues and plagues upon Egypt. And Egypt's getting destroyed and utterly just messed up because they won't let the Israelites go. And finally, they let the Israelites go. And Moses leads the people of Israel out of Egypt. And they're on their way to the Promised Land. They get out. And the first thing that happens after Egypt lets them go is that Pharaoh sends his whole army after them to destroy them. And God's people, Israel, are getting chased by the Egyptians. And they come to a lake. And they have no way to cross it. They're sitting there on a lake. They have a lake on one side and they have Egypt about to destroy them and just utterly kill them and enslave them again on the other side. And they're stuck. And Peter would have said, "Here's my living God. Let me tell you about him." This is how the story goes. Moses took his staff and he raised it and the seas parted. All the water went to one side and all the other water went to the other side. And Israel walked on dry ground across to the other side. And then the Egyptians came after us, and they were down in between the sea, and the sea's waters collapsed back again and destroyed them. When you talked to Peter and said, "Tell me about your living God," he would have known that story, and I bet that's the story he would have told you. About a God who controls the waters and the oceans, a God who hears his people and does something about it when they cry out to him. Now, that's the God that Peter knew and believed in. Now, if you're Peter, in his world, in his situation, there's some more things you need to know. Israel didn't stay a great nation. They became a great nation under David and Solomon. But they turned away from God, and their nation ended up being destroyed a few times over. And when you find Peter in the first century, living in Galilee, living in the land of Israel, Israel isn't a great nation anymore. They are a tiny little piece of the vast Roman Empire. They're a pimple. They're a speck. They're a pimple on the back of the giant Roman Empire. Is that a fair description? If they get annoying, you just pop them and get rid of them. That's disgusting. I'm sorry. Some people really think that's funny. That's good. But my point is this. Israel wasn't what it was created to be. They were to be this great, great nation. Their city, Jerusalem, was supposed to be a place where all nations came and saw Yahweh and came to worship God. But in Peter's life, in Peter's world, he's a lowly fisherman in Israel, which is a lowly, little, insignificant speck of the Roman Empire, that Rome could do whatever they wanted to. So if you were talking to Peter and he was telling you all about his living God, I would say, "Well, Peter, look around you. The world you're in, your God's not in control. Look around you. Those idols that you don't believe in, they're everywhere. There's Caesar's gods, there's Zeus, Artemis, anyone. There's the Greco-Roman gods are everywhere. Peter, where is your living God?" If I was Peter, I would be thinking about that and looking around in my life and knowing that, all right, we were called to be this great nation. God heard our cries in the past. But if I was Peter and I was honest with myself, I bet there's times when he was out there wondering, "Where is this living God I believe in? I've trusted him. I've put my faith in this God, this Yahweh. I know he's done incredible things for Israel in the past. Where is he?" Peter was a fisherman. I bet he sat out on that boat sometimes and thought about the God of Israel and thought, "The God I believe in could take these waters and control them and do whatever he wanted to with them. Where is that God? Where is the God of Israel right now?" If I'm Peter, that has to be a thought that I have. We were created to be great and marvelous, and we're not that. Something is wrong. Life is not how it should be for Peter, and he knows that. And he believes in this God that he calls the living God, and he thinks the other gods of the world are a complete joke. But when he looks around in the world he sees, the complete opposite is happening. No one recognizes his God outside of Israel. The Roman Empire is in control. The Roman Empire is in charge. Now, I want to tell you a little bit more about Peter. Peter held out hope. He believed that his living God would come and deliver his people one day. He knew that. He believed that. And there was something happening in Peter's world. He met a guy We'll call him Jesus, because that was his name. He met a guy named Jesus. Some of you know this story. He just started following this guy Jesus around, who was this gifted rabbi. And he started following Jesus, and he heard him. It actually changed his life so much. He was a fisherman, but he stopped and gave up the life he was living to follow Jesus. Jesus was saying incredible, incredible things. Right before the story we're going to look at tonight, he gave this sermon called the Sermon on the Mount. It's one of the most beautiful pieces in all literature, and you probably still read it in most colleges and things like that. This person, Jesus Christ, was going around and saying incredible things that had never been heard before. He was talking about the living God of Israel. And he was this gifted rabbi and teacher. And people were giving up their lives and following him around, listening to what he had to say. And Peter was one of them. Peter got out of his boat and followed Jesus. And he knew the God of Israel. He knew Yahweh. And he started to think, maybe this guy Jesus is going to have something to do with the living God. Maybe this guy Jesus could be like the Messiah. They believed in something called the Messiah. One person who would come one day and deliver God's people again and save them from the mess they were in. So Peter starts following Jesus and he starts witnessing incredible, mighty things. He hears words he'd never heard before. He sees Jesus healing people. He sees incredible things happening. Right before the story we're gonna open to and look at, Peter sees Jesus talking to 5,000 people and then feeding them with just a few loaves of bread. He sees a miraculous, miraculous thing happen. And Peter's got to be thinking, who is this guy Jesus that I've been following around? What's going on here? He's got the power to heal people. He's got the power to turn bread into way, way more bread. That's pretty good. Now, I want you guys to open with me and I want to look at a story. And it's on page... page 796. It's in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 14. And it's going to be on 796, the second section of that page. You see, Jesus walks on water is the heading. And verse 22. Okay. So Peter's been following Jesus, been hearing new things, been seeing the miraculous happen. And he just fed 5,000 people. And here's what Jesus does next. He takes Peter and his followers. He's got Peter's following him and a bunch of other people are his disciples. He's got 12 disciples who follow him pretty much everywhere now. After he feeds the 5,000, he sends the 12 away in a boat. He has them get on a boat and get on the sea and go out. And he's going to meet up with them later. And he takes time and he dismisses the people. And I guess he's talking with them and finishing up with them. And then he goes off and prays for a while. Yeah, I'm going to start reading in verse 22. And I'll just start there. Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. Okay, so if you're Peter, Jesus has left you. He's alone praying on a mountain somewhere. And you're out on the open seas in the middle of the night. Verse 24. But by this time the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he, Jesus, came walking toward them on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. All right, so you're Peter. You're out in the boat alone. It's the middle of the night. A storm's raging. And all of a sudden, I like the way Larissa put it. She did a really good job with that. You see this guy or this thing walking on the water. And like Larissa said, maybe his hair's blowing in the wind and his robe. It's the middle of a storm. And you see this guy coming towards you. And you're freaked out if you're Peter or one of Jesus' followers. You think, it's a ghost, and you cry out, and you're scared. So the first thing that's happening here is you're in the middle of a storm, and you see this guy walking on the water, and you're terrified. Let's keep reading. But immediately, Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid." So they hear the voice, and the voice says, "Hold on, it's Jesus, it's me, don't be afraid." Peter answered, and this is not how I would have answered. Something you should know about Peter, he's a pretty bold guy. If you read the Gospels, you'll see him kind of make decisions in an instant and kind of run with them. So that'll kind of play out here. This is not, if you're trying to be Peter, even if you're trying to think through Peter's mind, you probably wouldn't have said, "This is what I'm going to try to do." But here's what Peter says. Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." Peter hears Jesus, and he says, "Okay, God, Jesus, if it's you, let me come out here with you. I'll come running out to you." He said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came towards Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You have little faith. Why did you doubt?" I want to stop there for a second and just go over what's happening. Peter says, "Lord, if it's you, let me come out on the water." Jesus says, "Okay, come on." Peter gets out of the boat, comes out on the water. He's walking on the water. And then he looks and sees what he's doing, I think, and just gets scared. And he's frightened. And all of a sudden, he's drowning. He's the one drowning. He has no one to help him. And he cries out to the only one who could help him. He cries out, "Lord, save me." He's a drowning man with no options. "Lord, save me. It's you who let me come out here in the first place. Save me." And what happens is Christ immediately reaches down and brings him out and saves him. Now, I want to read the next couple of verses and be thinking about this. Actually, I just want to read verse 32 first. When they got into the boat, the wind ceased. Now, okay, they all get back in the boat. I want you to think about this. If you're Peter, what are you thinking right now? There's another story similar to this in one of the other Gospels where Jesus walks on water and comes to them and calms the storm. And when they end up back in the boat, their question is, who is this guy that even the winds and the seas obey him? If you're Peter, you're sitting in the boat, you're probably toweling off and getting dry because you were drowning 30 seconds ago, okay? You're back in the boat with your friends, and you're back in the boat with Jesus, and it's calm, and you're looking around and thinking, who is this guy? I know I've seen him do some miracles. I know I've seen him do some other things. But who is this guy that even the winds obey him? Who is this guy that when I cried could draw me out of the water? If you're Peter, do you know who you would figure out that he is? If you knew that story of Israel, who else do we know that could control the waters? It was his living God, Yahweh, the God of Israel, who was able to control the waters and the seas. And now he comes and he's met this guy, Jesus, who came walking on the water. And now turn with me. Go back to verse 33. I want to read just the last verse. Because Peter and his friends saw Jesus in a whole new way here. Those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Something happened in that story for Peter and for the people who were following Christ. They saw Jesus do something that they'd never seen anyone do. They saw something happen. They saw someone with the power that only their living God had. Yahweh of the Old Testament was the only one they'd heard of who could control the seas like this. And now in their midst was someone who was the living God. Someone who could walk on the water. And when Peter was drowning, the person he cried out to, this Jesus Christ, was the one who could save him and pull him out. He was the one who he could cry out to, just as Israel had cried out in their slavery. Peter cried out as he was drowning, and Jesus Christ was there, the living God, to deliver him. Now, I want us to pull back for a second. And we let go of Peter and bring this to our own world now. And I want to get back to the question I asked at the beginning. And again, it's a very, very simple question. And that is, do we as a people, all of us, you, me, everyone here, do we believe that this Jesus Christ is the living God who hears us? In Peter's world, he looked around and it didn't look like his God was there. But he found Christ and he believed and he found who the living God was. Our world is very similar. We look around. It doesn't look like our God is in control at times. We see a world broken. I heard Christian pray about wars that are going on and praying for peace and asking God to heal this world. But when we look at the world, we see a world that's not right. When we look at our own lives, we see lives that aren't right. Lives that are broken. Relationships that are hurting. Things that have gone wrong. We see a world that's not as it should be. And we have to ask and look at the same question. Do we believe this Jesus, this the God of Israel, the God of Peter, is he our God? Do we actually believe that he is a living God? And do we believe that he hears us? If we believe he hears us, it will change how we actually live. It will change what we actually believe about our lives. If God hears us, then we will go to him. If we believe that he's actually hearing us and listening to us, we will go to him so much more than we do. I think as Christians, the ugly middle ground that we end up in is that we know we're supposed to believe something like this. We know, all right, Jesus Christ is Lord and he died for us. Of course Jesus is the living God who hears. I know I'm supposed to believe that. The problem is I think we get in this middle ground where we know we're supposed to believe it. But the truth is, in our lives, how we live and what we do, we don't actually believe that. We take things in our own hands. We look at all our little worries and cares and concerns, and we try to take them into our own hands, and we try to figure out things on our own, and we don't take real issues and real life and real struggles to the living God. We say we believe it, but it forces us to ask another question of all of us. How we actually live, not what we say we believe, but how we live day in, day out. Is it a life where we believe that God hears us? Or is it a life where we think we have to figure things out on our own? Where we have to solve our own problems? Where we have to keep up with whatever life we think we're supposed to have and meet the needs of our culture and look this way and act this way and think this way and be a certain way? And we try to figure everything out on our own and have our own lives settled. And in practice, we don't actually believe that God hears us. In practice, we're trying to figure everything out on our own. Now, I want us to hear something tonight. If we believe that he is a God who hears us, it's going to cause us to do something. It's going to cause us to do something very, very simple. But it will cause us, it will be something that will change our lives. In this, if we believe he's a God who hears us and that he can do something about the situation in this world, then it will cause us to cry out to him way more than we do. That sounds simple. Okay, Jared, are you just saying we should pray more? I'm not saying that. I'm saying we need to go to God and cry out to him to change this world. When Israel was in slavery, they didn't sit and think abstractly and say, oh, if we keep praying to God and talking to him about a few things, or if we keep just trusting that God's kind of in control. No, they were slaves. They cried and groaned out to God to get them out of the slavery they were in. When Peter was drowning, he didn't think, oh, wow, this is kind of just God's plan for me, and whatever happens, happens. No, he was drowning. He didn't want to drown, so he cried out to God in the situation that he was in. The truth is for us, if we look at this world on one hand and see that it is not as it should be, and can we agree on that? That this world, when we look at it, our lives, the lives around us, the world as a whole, is still not as it should be. On one hand, if we see that, and on the other hand, we see that this Jesus Christ is the living God and came to make this world what it should be and came to heal us and make us whole and complete. If we see that this world isn't yet what it is, we need to cry out to God to hear us and to change this world. That is what we are called to be as Christians, a people that go to God and cry out to him. Not a people that try to get some things under the handle and then make sure they say some prayers and make sure they maybe if there's something going on in your life that you can't control yet, you pray to God about it. The truth is, we can't control our lives. And when we try to think we have everything under control, we're just fooling ourselves. We need to cry out to God a lot more than we do. And actually take everything, the pain in your own life, the pain in the world around you, the world you see that's broken, and cry out to God that it shouldn't be this way. And cry out to Him and take everything to Him. If you believe He hears you, then cry out to Him and tell Him what's wrong. If you are drowning, cry out to Him. If you see people around you who are drowning, even if they don't believe it, go to God and cry out for them. Cry out for this world. There's one other story in the Old Testament, and we did a whole sermon on it a couple years ago. And if you want to look it up, you can look it up. It's in September of 06. You can find it in our archives. It's this fantastic story about a woman named Hannah who is barren, and she can't have any children, and she's crying out to God for a child. And she's actually in the temple crying out to God, and she's crying out so hard and so fervishly. Is that the word? Fervishly. Crying out to God. And she's crying out to God so intensely that the priest in the temple yells at her and thinks she's just drunk because she's blubbering it all over the place. And she says, "No, I'm not drunk. I'm crying out to God that He would give me a child." We need to be like that. If we believe this, if we believe who He is, if we believe that our church, our community is called with a purpose to reach Red Bank, to reach this world, and we see so many things wrong and broken that need to be healed and fixed, then the thing we need to do is to go to God, because He does hear us. We have to go to Him. Share what is going on in our world with Him. Go without any preconceived notions. Just go to Him and beg with Him and plead with Him to bring this world into what He wants it to be. God wants this world to be whole and complete and restored. That's why His Son came. The world is still not as it should be. And we're His followers. We need to tell Him. We need to cry out to Him again and again and again to heal this world. I'm going to pray. And then when I'm finished praying, the musicians will come back up and we'll sing a song. Let's pray.